And now, for our Labor Day weekend faith story, we hear from Juan Ramirez.
This weekend, we celebrate Labor Day, and we give thanks for those who are employed, as well as we also pray for those who are looking for work. I myself have been part of the unemployed force, like some of you. But before I get into my work-related story, let me share with you some about Juan Ramirez. I was born and raised in Mexico and grew up going to church every week. I even attended a private religious school all the way from elementary school to high school that included daily religious and traditions and rituals. Even though I was surrounded by all these religious activities, I never had a personal relationship with God. When I started college at the University of Veracruz, my spiritual life didn't get any better. By most people's standards, I was a pretty good guy, but God was just not part of my life. And then, when I won a scholarship to study in the United States, I was even more distracted with all the excitement of traveling to a new country that God just took a backseat in my life. When I arrived in the United States, I first went to New England, where I learned English in an intensive language training program, and that's where I picked up this wonderful Bostonian accent. Eventually, I came to Minnesota to finish college and start working. It was during this time that a friend of mine told me about knowing Jesus Christ personally and invited me to visit his church. It was something that I have never experienced before. Lots of people who were very happy to come to church, lots of good music, upbeat and lively music with people clapping their hands, and a preacher that had a very simple message of having a personal relationship with Jesus and how much Jesus loved me. Well, it didn't take too long before I committed my life to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. This was about 25 years ago. Let's fast forward to the present. It is Labor Day weekend. The economic news and headlines are not the greatest. 1 out of 5 unemployed people have been out of work for 6 months or more, and the rate at which people have been changing jobs is increasing. Case in point. When I started my first job with the finest company in the world, IBM, it lasted 18 years. My second job with General Electric, also another one of the finest companies, it lasted 4 years. My third job lasted 2 years, my fourth 1.5 years, and the rest have lasted 1 year or less, just a sign of the current economic times. What is the lesson here? My lesson is that when we go through trials, whether they are work-related or not, it is easier to get discouraged, to get down, to feel overwhelmed, and to lose faith. What I have also learned is that the best way to deal with these trials is by trusting the Lord unconditionally, just the same way I did 25 years ago. This time around, I have learned that trials of almost any kind are expected, and that whether I like it or not, they are good for me. They are good for me because they help me to learn and endure. They help me to develop a stronger character, and they help me to have more confidence on the Lord. I'm happy to report that I have had my good share of trials in my life, but most importantly, I have had just as many, if not more, blessings. The Lord has blessed me by working and learning at some of the finest companies in the world. He has given me 3 wonderful children, David, Liana, and Jonathan, and a beautiful and wonderful wife, Marcy, whom I just met recently. The Lord has given me many good friends, and he has also blessed me with the opportunity to start my own business. Do I get butterflies in my stomach? Yes, I do. Do I get concerned about starting a new business during these economic times? Certainly, of course I do. But I also know that by trusting and waiting on the Lord, he will be faithful and help me just as he has done many times before. Like the prophet Isaiah said, but those who wait on the Lord will find new strength. They will fly high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. Thank you very much.
Last week, there were four of us from Wooddale Church visiting in the southwestern African country of Mozambique. Mozambique is a place of tragedy and triumph. It is repeatedly listed among the six poorest countries in the world. 17.5% of the adult population is HIV positive. There are tens of thousands of orphans. And yet, the number of people becoming Christians and the growth of the Church of Jesus Christ in this place of great difficulty and tragedy is breathtaking. In fact, there are some who say that Christianity is growing more rapidly in Mozambique than in any other country of the entire world. Well, it was about a week ago in Mozambique that we were offered ants for breakfast. Now, I don't want to give the wrong impression. They were optional. They were sort of a side dish. And they had been captured and boiled and then deep fried and then served to us. And mine, at least, tasted better than you would normally imagine an ant to taste. It's kind of interesting to describe. It sort of had the texture of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Kind of extra crispy. But when you bit into it, you snapped the juicy part, and it was sweet, sort of a honey-like taste inside. You ought to try it sometime. And I think there's a whole new snack food possibility for General Mills and Nabisco here in the United States to feed hungry Americans. But as I ate the ant, I thought to myself, I don't know, is this a good thing or not? I actually felt a little guilty because the ant is among the heroes of God. Of all the animals in the animal kingdom, it is the ant that is described by the sage of Proverbs in the Old Testament, saying, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest." Now, most of us do not consider ourselves to be sluggards, nor do we think that there is much that any of us could ever learn from an ant. But maybe we better at least ask ourselves the question, are you a sluggard? And it's a simple four-point quiz to take. Usually we think of a sluggard as someone who doesn't do anything. But actually, everybody does something. It's impossible to do nothing. Even if you sleep for 23 hours every day, then you are at least sleeping. So it is possible to be a very busy sluggard. The busy sluggard spends many hours every day working as hard as he can at not working, but it's still sort of doing something. In fact, some very busy sluggards develop intricate plans in order to not do things, in order to not improve their marriage or not pay their bills or not go to work or not get healthy. In fact, you can think to yourself with many a sluggard, if you'd put as much energy into going to work, into improving your marriage, into getting healthy, then all of those things would be taken care of. You see, what we need to do with the work that we have is what is right. And it can be hard to consistently do what is right. Some sluggards just can't be bothered with putting the energy into doing what is good and right, and therefore do the wrong thing. But then there are some sluggards who are wonderfully and specially gifted, but they misuse the resources that they have. These are people who are very smart, but don't use their smarts. You see it where there are highly intelligent students who get very poor grades. There are high potential people who have low performance. There are those who have plenty of money, but it's badly squandered. The sluggard is someone who just never thinks that she has enough. That if she had more money, if she had more time, if she had more energy, if she had, then everything could get done. But in the process of all of this, squanders the sometimes extraordinary gifts that God has given. For example, great inheritance can destroy a sluggard. If someone is a sluggard and inherits $1 million, that is almost a guaranteed formula for failure. Look at the stories that have permeated our press over recent months about lottery winners. Those who had relatively normal and healthy lives and then won the big bucks and as a result have ended up in debt, their lives destroyed, their marriages ended, their families alienated, simply because they misused the resources that they had. A sluggard is someone who rarely, if ever, appreciates the blessings of God and seldom uses those blessings very well. Some sluggards do work hard once in a while, but a sluggard is someone who readily allows other people to carry a disproportionate share of the load. It is the attitude that says, let someone else do it. And you can see those people. Watch them as they walk across a parking lot and they come to litter. They leave it there to let someone else pick it up. Or watch them as they walk through the kitchen, past the dishes. They leave them there. Someone else can wash them. Or the sluggard does not volunteer in community or church. The assumption is that other people can do the volunteering. And the sluggard does not advance the business, just works there, gets a paycheck, but assumes that someone else will make the business better. A physician told me a story from his residency where a cardiac patient had a monitor, a portable monitor attached to him. And an alarm went off while the residents were gathered in a conference room indicating that that patient was in cardiac arrest. They took their equipment and ran to the room of that patient only to find that the bed was empty. And recognizing that every second counted, they scrambled looking in rooms and hallways and every place they could and tragically did not find him until after he had died. They found his body between his bed and the wall. And the saddest part of all was, in the follow-up to all of this, in talking to his roommate, discovered that his roommate knew exactly where he was when he was having this cardiac arrest. But when asked why he didn't tell, said, well, no one really asked me where he was. It's let somebody else do it, even if it costs that other person his or her life. That roommate was a sluggard. Sluggards let someone else do the work, pay the bills, take the responsibility. In fact, one of the most quotable and frequently spoken lines of the sluggard is, it's not my problem, it's somebody else's problem. Then there are sluggards who are just plain lazy. They don't like to work, they don't want to work, all they can think about is themselves, and they are very selfish sluggards. Call them lazy sluggards, except that's kind of redundant because the definition of a sluggard is someone who is lazy. Almost all work is avoided at any price, at any time. Some lazy sluggards just blame others. Blame others for all of their issues and circumstances and problems. Everything is someone else's fault. And the sluggard rarely sees herself or himself as a sluggard. Now, more as a victim, more as someone who has suffered the ill consequences of other people's attitudes and actions. Now, what about us? I mean, when you look at those 4 points in that quiz, how do you test out? Because most of us say we are not sluggards. If anything, we work too much and too hard. We are a nation of workaholics. One recent national article said that Americans are taking vacations at lesser rate now than at any time in recent history, that we don't take our days off, and that if we do take the day off, we'd spend that day simply doing more work. We're trying to protect our jobs. We put in more hours than people in any other industrialized nation in the world. But the truth of it is that there's some sluggard in all of us. A laziness that says, let the other guy do it. A desire to have more money so that we don't have to work and that other people can then work for us. That we all have a tendency, sometimes exercised and sometimes not, to take advantage of others. And so what we all need to do is go to the ant as sluggards. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler. Yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. Consider the ant. Small but smart, comparatively little. The ants that we were fed were about a half inch long. I guess that's kind of big as ants come. There are 9,000 different species of ants, but as compared to most of the rest of the animal world, they are tiny. Nothing compared to a soaring eagle or a thundering elephant, but they are smart, and they are numerous. If you go to the Amazon rainforest and take 1 square mile, or the entire rainforest, and if you were to weigh all of the ants that live there, you would have a total weight 4 times greater than the total of all of the mammals and reptiles and birds and amphibians combined. So even though an ant is small, and even though it is light and weight combined together, they are more than all of the others. There are some ant super colonies that are 1 mile square. They have as many as 45,000 interconnected colonies with a population in excess of 300 million ants. They're small, but they're wise. They work together. They flourish under adversity. And they provide enormous value and benefit to ecosystems. They dig tunnels. They fertilize seeds. They provide aeration for the soil. They have tunnels that allow moisture to get into the ground. In Mozambique, we passed a lot of interesting anthills along the side of the road, and I was sufficiently fascinated by them that I wanted to stop and get some pictures and check them out. So we went up to the first anthill, and I'm much experienced with anthills of this stature. So I went over to it and kicked it really hard. And you don't want to do that because they have roughly the hardness and feel of a concrete road barrier is the best I can. So it hurt my foot, but it did not in the least scratch the anthill. But not thinking that an anthill would get the better of me, I figured, you know, you can kick it this way and you can kick it that way. And there I am kicking this anthill to no effect when some dear compassionate lady in a village that was nearby came over with an axe pick, apparently thinking that for some reason I needed to get into the anthill. And she took this huge swing, which made more of a noise than a dent in the anthill. And then some men arrived, and they assisted her, and they're swinging hard until this anthill is cracked open, and they're big pieces, and no ants. Because they heard the warning, and they all went downstairs. So they're all now down, underground, inside this apparently empty anthill. They are wise. They are small, but they are smart. And therein is a lesson for us sluggards, that it's not what you've got, it's what you do with what you've got. The ants don't have much. They're not very important. They're inconsequential. Saying to us that even if you are small and even if you are insignificant, that you should leverage your resources. Be wise. Be smart. Be a good steward of that which you have. Ant colonies are places where they do what they need to do. They are highly organized in divisions of labor so that every ant has a job to be done. For example, in every ant colony, there is one queen, and her job is to lay eggs. That's about all she does. Other ants feed her, they groom her, they take care of her. She just lays eggs. And some of them are amazingly prolific. For example, the queen among the African driver ants lays 3 to 4 million eggs per month and has a relatively long life expectancy for an ant. This queen lives typically about 7 years. Now, that adds up to a lot of eggs. I mean, I tried to imagine a conversation in which someone said, well, how many children do you have? And she says, I don't know, it's about 300 million right now. And you think you have difficulty remembering your children's names, but just imagine if she gets halfway through and forgets and has to start all over again in order to call you by name. But that's her job to do. What she does is she lays eggs. Now, the male ants are very different. Their job is basically to mate and to die. And they live just a few weeks or just a few months. The female worker ants, they are the ones that dig the tunnels and collect and process the food and care for other ants. That's their job. That's what they do. And so the ant colony thrives as long as every ant does its part. As long as everyone meets its responsibility, then there is a synergy among all of them together. And so it is for us sluggards. We need to do our part, whatever our part may be. None of us is responsible to do it all. Maybe in your employment, your part is in management. Maybe you are the boss or at least a boss and you have people reporting to you. You are told that one of your accomplishments is to contribute to the bottom line and make your business profitable, and that is certainly true. But your part is also to provide fair wages and good working conditions and to develop the people whose work is under your supervision. That's your part. We all need to do our part. August 14, 2003 brought the largest blackout to date in the history of the United States, darkening much of the northeastern United States and southeastern Canada. It brought enormous delays to the commercial airline industry in North America. But USA Today newspaper this past week reported that one airline was completely different than all of the others in the way it was handled, and that was Northwest. That when baggage machines failed, employees moved the luggage by hand. That when jetways couldn't move, that workers rolled up stairs. That when airports closed, flights were efficiently diverted to airports that were open. That when Detroit Metro closed down because of a lack of power, and Northwest was still trying to move planes in and out of Detroit, they couldn't get meals for their flights, and so they sent a plane to Minneapolis and had it catered and had the food brought to Detroit. Just like the ants in the Bible, everyone doing its part. That is exactly what we are to do and the lesson that is ours, that not any one of us is responsible to do everything, but all of us are responsible to do our parts to contribute to the whole. Proverbs 6:7 says that the ant has no commander, no overseer or ruler. Ant colonies have queens, but they have no kings. There's no need for them because the ants are internally motivated. When an ant dies, others immediately carry away the body. When the colony is under attack, you know, by a tourist with a pickaxe or something, then the word is spread. With some ant species, it is by sound. With others, it is a trail of smell that is put through the ant colony in order to warn them. And then they can fight or they can flee. When the anthill caves in, there are workers that rush to rebuild. And when anything needs to be done, they do it without command, without a hierarchy, without a general or a commander. And that is because they are internally motivated, because they are wired to work and they don't need to be told what to do. They just do what needs to be done. That's a lesson for us to learn from the ants. In Johannesburg, I met some people like these ants. They work very hard. They work with those who are suffering with HIV/AIDS, people who are, in some cases, so weak that they cannot get food to eat. These workers babysit for their children. They provide transport to medical care. They sit and give counsel. They help to wash people. They do the most menial of tasks for those who are most desperate for help, some of them abandoned by their own families. They are part of a cadre of workers who put in very long hours with discipline, showing up early in the morning, wearing a T-shirt that identifies them as aid workers, all under the supervision of a South African woman whose mother gave her the unlikely name of waitress. But what is most amazing is that they are all volunteers. They're a part of the thousands and thousands of aid worker volunteers among the churches and Christians of Southern Africa. But let me tell you part of why they are volunteers, and that is because there is such horrific unemployment in Southern Africa. South Africa itself is one of the most prosperous nations in Africa. In fact, just one province north of Johannesburg provides 25% of the gross domestic product of the entire continent. So what wealth there is in Africa is significantly concentrated in the south, but South Africa suffers from 40% unemployment. These are people who want to work but can't work. But they are internally motivated, and so when they can't get jobs, what they do is they volunteer to help the people who are more desperate than they are. They don't have supervisors, they don't have paychecks, they don't have benefits, they don't have much of anything. But they are internally motivated to serve others and to do it in the name of Jesus Christ. They're like the ants. And so we are to be like the ants, to work like the volunteers, to not wait to be recruited, to not wait for someone to tell us what to do, to not expect there to be some commander, some reward, some benefit, but to just do what needs to be done because it comes out of us and out of our hearts. Minnesotans know that ants are, for us, especially a summer phenomenon. That is, a lot of ants show up at a 4th of July picnic, but very few ants come to snowmobile races. It's kind of a seasonal thing. And that means that ants need to seize today's summer opportunity. That is, if they are going to gather food, they need to do it before the winter comes. They need to do it in the harvest season. The most common ant in the Middle East, where the words of Proverbs 6 were written, is the harvester ant. The harvester ant is also present among the ants of North America, and so are here in our own nation. Harvester ants gather seeds when the season is ripe. Although ants can't eat seeds, they, as adults, eat only liquid food, and that means that the seeds need to be brought to the colony where other workers break them open and then take the inside and turn that inside into a liquid that then becomes the source of food supply for all of the other ants in the colony. But if they don't get the seeds in season, then it's too late, and then the colony starves. Sluggards are those who are always waiting for a better tomorrow, who are saying there aren't enough seeds out there for today, you know, maybe we can do it later. But the ant seizes the opportunity when it is there, even if that opportunity seems to be less than the best. When I was a young pastor in Colorado in a church not too large, we decided to hire a part-time custodian. And there was one applicant for the position. He was an out-of-work executive whose dream of employment was something far better, and expectation of salary was something very, very different. He wanted a full-time job, and all we had available to him was a part-time job. He lived with his family in a rental place along the railroad tracks, and the trains came through regularly and literally shook the entire house and everything that was in it. But let me tell you that he did an outstanding job. He became for me a friend and a colleague and a coworker. What he did was seize that day's opportunity, even though it was less than he would have dreamed and what he would not normally have chosen. Why do ants do this? Why do they seize today's opportunity, even if it is less than their dreams? They do it because they are preparing for the future. Proverbs 6:8 says that the ant stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. That's because the ant is getting ready for winter, getting ready for drought, getting ready for famine, getting ready for attack. One of the clearest characteristics of sluggards is a lack of preparation for the future. Sluggards live only in the present. Ants and other good workers don't just live for today, but anticipate tomorrow. Practically, that means don't spend all the money that you make. save some for another day. It means, contrary to what some advertising may tell us, don't just live for the moment. Think ahead. And if any of us are tempted to say, well, that lacks trust in God, understand that that does not lack trust in God. It is the forethought and preparation of a faithful and wise worker who realizes that while the future cannot be guaranteed, only God can be guaranteed, that we have a responsibility to not be sluggards, but to prepare for the future. On the first Monday of every September, our nation celebrates Labor Day. It is to honor those who work hard for a living. Not because they're presidents, it's not President's Day. Not because they're famous, it's not named after any particular worker. It is not for those who are powerful. It is not for those whose names make the newspaper on the front page. It's not for those who have titles that are part of their names. Labor Day is simply for those who work. And it is one day out of a calendar of 365, but understand that for God, every day is a Labor Day. Because every day God honors those who work. From the industrious ant way below the ground, all the way to the employee downtown in the high rise. Labor union workers, company managers and executives, farmers, mechanics, clerks, physicians, nurses, teachers, students, truck drivers, homemakers and soldiers, pilots, the self-employed, job seekers and engineers and maintenance workers, clerks and CEOs, accountants, writers, musicians, technicians, administrators, and the list goes on. May we all go to the ant, consider its ways, and be wise. God bless each one of us and bless the work that we do, that we may be faithful to you, that we may take the admonition to avoid laziness and to do what is good and right with the resources that you have entrusted to us. This we do as Christians. In the name of Jesus whom we serve, amen.